sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. It's an honor to have Dr. Paul Craig Roberts join me on the show today. He's a former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury and Associate Editor and Columnist for The Wall Street Journal. He's testified before committees in Congress on 30 occasions. Dr. Roberts was awarded the U.S. Treasury's Meritorious Service Award for outstanding contributions to the formulation of U.S. economic policy. And he has held academic appointments at 6 universities. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Cheryl.
You have a new book out called How America Was Lost, From 9/11 to the Police Warfare State by Clarity Press. And on their website, there's a quote there by you that says, "The American people have suffered a coup d'etat, but they are hesitant to acknowledge it." Can you elaborate on that?
Well, they've lost the Constitution. And, of course, the Constitution is what the country is. Without the Constitution, we're not the United States. We're something else. And so we've lost the country. And the reason that I say we've lost the Constitution is that the protective features of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, such as habeas corpus, due process, attorney-client privilege, right to life, all of these things have been terminated in the name of fighting terrorism. In place of habeas corpus, we now have the policy of indefinite detention established by the Bush regime and upheld by the Obama regime. And what indefinite detention does, it repeals habeas corpus. It says that the government can pick up American citizens and throw them in prison and leave them there indefinitely without ever presenting any evidence to a court or obtaining a conviction. And this is the way the rulers behave prior to the Magna Carta in 1215. And every aspect of due process has been lost, and Obama added to the various atrocities the right of the president to murder U.S. citizens without due process of law, without evidence or conviction, just on suspicion alone that they might in some way be related to terrorism. So the Constitution is gone, and the protective features in law that made law a shield of the people instead of a weapon in the hands of government, they've all been destroyed. So what is the United States? I don't think people know quite exactly what it is. It is a police state. Most people say, oh, how can it be? They're not bothering me. Well, generally speaking, police states don't bother everybody. You know, have all of Germany in the camps, was using them to fight his wars. And Stalin didn't have all Russia in the gulag. So the police state only touches the good, the concern, the people who stand up for justice or truth or challenge the lies or challenge the way the system works for or in the benefit of a few people. So that's the short, brief answer.
Okay. So this is a post-9/11 agenda, then, to take away our Constitution and its domestic version of the post-9/11 agenda to take over the world, or?
Well, it does both. 9/11 was used to launch the neoconservative ideology of U.S. world hegemony, that the United States, having been chosen by history as the indispensable, exceptional country, has a right to impose its will on the rest of the world. So that began with the Middle Eastern wars. We've now destroyed pretty much 7 countries. And hand in hand, in order to shut up critics and punish whistleblowers and stop people from having good information, they had the assault on U.S. civil liberties. So the two things go together. The assault on the civil liberties were really necessary in order to protect the government from any accountability for its lies, you know, like weapons of mass destruction, or Iranian nukes, or Assad used sarin gas, or various lies they told about Gaddafi. And so they didn't want any information coming out contrary to the propaganda line. And it's been very effective. You never see the mainstream media challenge any government lie.
Yeah, now you talked about the seven countries that we've already destroyed. And I know Wesley Clark came out, I think it was in 2007 or 8, mentioning that the generals at the Pentagon had told him about seven countries that we were going to destroy in 5 years after 9/11. One of them was Syria.
Others were Libya, Iraq, Iran, Sudan, Somalia, and Lebanon.
So maybe you could talk a little bit about what's happening in Syria and how we're actually working with Al-Qaeda there.
Well, that is funny, isn't it? Because the whole war on terror that they've used for, what now, 13 years of wars, and the attack on civil liberties is all due to allegedly Al-Qaeda terrorists. So now we're working hand in glove with them. We're trying to overthrow Assad, and we wanted to do it with our own military. Obama had it all set up. They said they had this red line they drew, and if Assad of Syria used chemical weapons, we would attack him. And so then we orchestrated a false flag event, blamed Assad, and we were all ready to attack. But two things happened. The British Parliament put their foot down and said, no, we're not going to support another American war crime. And this cut the ground out from under the Prime Minister Cameron, who's just a Washington stooge. And the Russians put their foot down and said that, in fact, they showed various military movements. They spoke in rather strong terms. And so it looked like we might be getting into more than we could manage, because we were prepared to take on Syria, but not if we had to encounter also some sort of Russian intervention. And without the British cover, we would look like an aggressor and therefore be subject to war crime charges. So that blocked the direct involvement of the U.S. So we've been working through various Islamic groups, some of which are Al-Qaeda, some of which are terrorist groups of their own, to destabilize and destroy the Syrian government. I see now recently we're equipping them with more powerful weapons because they're losing. The Syrian people are standing behind the government, and the Islamists are losing, so we're giving them more powerful weapons. So it is quite a hypocrisy, and yet it receives very little notice. Congress is not saying, how come you're supporting the people that you said blew up the World Trade Center and the Pentagon?
Right. It's astounding.
Why are we supporting them now? Are they really better than Assad? What has Assad done to us? Nothing, of course. And those questions don't get asked. The New York Times doesn't write an editorial on what's going on. And the people are, most Americans are very poorly informed, and they're really not motivated to be informed. So there's no check on all of this murder and mayhem that we're causing all over the world.
Yeah. Do you think the Americans just aren't wanting to take this on because they just don't know enough of the details, or are they just, I don't know, so demoralized they can't function?
I don't know what the reason is. I would say one reason is they just don't have any good information. They have propaganda, and they don't, not too many of them make the effort to search out the alternative media online and decide which is good information consistently and what isn't. And they just turn on Fox News or CNN or whatever, and they get the same BS, the same lies.
Yeah. Now, and I understand from reading your website that you actually, even though you've been involved in the Reagan administration, you've been involved with the Wall Street Journal deeply, that you can't get any kind of mainstream coverage for what you do now.
Not from the American media, no. Yeah. I can get it from foreign media without any trouble. But the American print and TV media was concentrated in, I think, about five mega companies of the last year or two of the Clinton regime. And so what was a dispersed media and somewhat independent, the American media has never been very good, but dispersed and somewhat independent media was concentrated in a few hands. The companies are not run by journalists. They're run by corporate advertising executives and former government officials. And the value of the media companies is the federal broadcast licenses. And they don't get renewed if they get on the wrong side of the government. And they also don't want to get on the wrong side of corporate advertisers. So basically, reporters and editors understand that they're supposed to support the line, the corporate line and the Wall Street line and the government line. And so that's what they do.
So those seven countries that Wesley Clark mentioned and the other ones that we've, you know, Afghanistan, et cetera, but now we're into Ukraine, the Ukraine. Is this an extension of the geopolitical agenda of the power elite, or what's happening here?
Well, we don't know for sure. They'll never say. I think what has happened, and I've thought about this a lot, I think what has happened is the Russians blocked Obama's attack on Syria, and they blocked the planned attack on Iran. They worked out that deal where Iran would not enrich the uranium past the low level for energy purposes, nuclear power. That blocked the planned attack on two of the main countries that we wanted to get rid of. So I think they decided that they needed to give Russia some problems to distract them from getting in Washington's way and give them bring a serious strategic threat to their backyard so that they would then be preoccupied with that, less inclined and less able to antagonize Washington's march through the countries. And so I think that was the main reason for the Ukraine. Now, it's been going for a long time. You may remember in 2004, the United States financed the Orange Revolution in Ukraine. It succeeded, but it didn't deliver the country to the West the way that Washington had hoped, because basically the country realizes it's essentially Russian, is part of Russia and the Soviet Union for over 200 years, and a lot of the population is Russian, and in fact, most of the language spoken there is Russian, and they're integrated in the Russian economy. They haven't hardly any economic relations with the West. And so it didn't work out. And so what we also know is since that 2004 color revolution, the United States has spent $5 billion, according to Victoria Nuland, the Assistant Secretary of State, who orchestrated the coup. According to her, the U.S. spent $5 billion in the last 10 years on NGOs, non-governmental organizations, inside Ukraine, allegedly for things like building democracy or women's rights, education. But what these were American fifth columns, and they spread the money around, and they groom politicians who are willing to be American puppets, and they try to move them into positions so they can achieve power and influence. And I think when the Ukraine voted against joining the EU, or the president of the Ukraine, analyzed it all and said, well, really, it's far better for us to keep these relations with Russia. They subsidize our energy costs. They lend us money. In fact, we don't even pay for our energy. And why do we want to get out of this good arrangement? Well, then we launched the protest. That's when we called the chits on our NGOs, and the NGOs came in the streets, and a lot of misguided people, probably the idiots in the university, you know, the students, they're gullible, they always fall for this stuff. At least that's always been my experience. So initially, the protests were about overruling the decision not to join the EU. They wanted to join the EU, and the protests were telling the president, look, change your mind and join the EU. We want to be part of Europe. Well, that didn't go on long before the right-wing elements introduced violence, essentially took over the protests and changed the demands from joining the EU to overthrowing the government. And the Americans had enough of their stooges in the parliament to disband the police, so there was no protection for the ruling party or the president, and they had to flee. So the whole thing broke down, and there was an American orchestrated coup, and the people who took power are exactly the people that Victoria Nuland and the American ambassador in Kiev chose in that intercepted telephone call that was released and is available on the Internet, where you hear them discussing their choice of who is going to be their stooges in the new government that the Americans are setting up. You know, the government there now is not elected. It is chosen by Washington and stuck in office. So this was a mistake for Washington because they overlooked that a large part of Ukraine is not really Ukraine, it's Russia. It was added to Ukraine by Soviet party leaders at a time when Ukraine and Russia were part of the same country. So Crimea was stuck into Ukraine in 1954 by Khrushchev. and the sections in Ukraine, which just held yesterday the referendums, were stuck in by Lenin. So these are Russians, they're Russian-speaking, they're Russian areas, and they never really thought they were anything else because the Russian Soviet Republic and the Ukrainian Soviet Republic were just like two states in the Soviet Union. It was all the same country, so you weren't Russian or Ukrainian, you were Soviet. So Washington overlooked this and was caught off guard by the very rapid outbreak of protest in southern and eastern Ukraine, in the Russian areas. And they may have also been caught off guard by the right sector, these right-wing neo-Nazis that introduced the violence into the protest and changed the demands. This group appears to be now increasingly influential, so that just as we have Washington working with al-Qaeda in Syria, we have them working with neo-Nazis in the Ukraine. These are the people whose roots go back, they fought for Hitler in World War II. They had their own SS divisions, these Ukrainians in the West. And so whether or not, I don't know for sure whether Washington knew about these people or how strong they would be and worked with them from the beginning and used them to overthrow the government, or whether Washington was caught off guard by them. Yeah. But now this is the main force that the government in Kiev has to use against the eastern and southern areas in Ukraine that are protesting. And the Kiev government sent Ukrainian military units into these areas. Most of them either refused the order or defected to the protesters. And the violence has been done by these neo-Nazi elements, these paramilitary groups. They seem to be the only reliable force that the American imposed government in Kiev has. So it's a very hypocritical situation.
How dangerous is it for, you know, a major war with Russia?
I think that with these votes Sunday, again, they were overwhelming, just like Crimea, and now the Donetsk Basin, that area in the eastern Ukraine, they now asked Russia today to accept them into the Russian Federation. I don't think Putin can do anything except accept them. He can't leave them hanging, and it's clear as day, as much as he hoped that this would all work out, that the United States have no intention of letting this work out. You know, Washington keeps fueling it and fueling it and fueling it and lying and lying and lying and blaming Russia for the protest and never says a word about the fact that they overthrew a government and stuck in Stooges.
I'm amazed by what they say in the corporate media. It's always shocking.
Yeah. It is amazing. So I think that the Ukraine Stooge government hasn't got much public support, and I think that the sincere elements in the original protest, they probably realize now they were gullible fools and they've brought all kinds of disaster on themselves. So it's not clear that there's any support for this Kiev government.
Yeah, and aren't they under the control now of the International Monetary Fund and all the austerity programs they have to now impose?
If they aren't already, they soon will be, because that's the looting part of it. I mean, the West will loot Ukraine, and that, of course, will make life there even harder, and it will mean even less support for the Stooge government. So I think, in my view, what's going to happen is the Russian areas are going to go back to Russia. I don't think Putin particularly wants that, because I think they're a financial drain, and Russia's trying to do other things. He was really trying to keep the Ukraine together and stay on the same good terms. He didn't really care who president is, but he wanted them to stay together and keep on good terms. He wasn't trying to break it up. But now I think the coup has broken it up, particularly because the Stooge government we installed started all these violent words and actions against Russians.
Yeah.
You know, they destroyed the war memorials of the Soviet liberating the Ukraine from the Nazis. They destroyed the war memorials. They banned the use of Russian as an official language, and they were talking about arresting the Russian population that kept dual citizenship. And so they were making very serious and scary threats against the Russian population in Ukraine. So that cost them the Russian population.
Yeah, and I want to go back a minute to the NGOs that you mentioned earlier and how the U.S. government worked through them to infiltrate the country and have protesters there where they need them. Do you have the names of those NGOs?
Oh, there's huge numbers of them. there's hundreds. I think in Russia there may be as many as 1,000. Mm. We did the same thing to Russia. See, the NGO, non-governmental organizations, all of this stemmed from, we created, I think in the 80s, a group to spread protest and trouble and dissent in Soviet Eastern Europe. The National Endowment for Democracy. And it funds non-governmental organizations, and these organizations are for various things. You know, we're going to teach you how to have democracy. We're going to teach you how to make protests. We're going to advance women's rights. All this is cover. Okay. What they are, they're groups to breed people inside a country that you want to influence and control and maybe overthrow, and have them used to working with you and believing your line and your propaganda, and you raise them to prominence politically so they can get in power and so on. And there are huge numbers of these. They used them in Georgia. They used them in Iran.
Yeah.
You remember the so-called Green Revolution?
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't go anywhere, but that was American-based. They bragged on it. Yeah. One of the non-governmental organizations, even before the vote, said, oh, it's going to be a Green Revolution. Oh, I've helped fund it. I quoted and cited at the time. So we used them everywhere. We used them in Georgia. That's how we got Georgia in our pocket. And we tried to use it in Iran, the previous president, not the current one, but the previous one, his election. We turned loose the NGOs we've been financing, so on and so on. And we used them against Putin's last election. We sent them into the streets. You know, there were 50,000 protesting in Moscow that Putin had stole the election. These are all American agents, essentially. They're probably stupid. They probably believe the stuff, but they're, in fact, American agents. And for 20 years, the Russian government didn't even make them register as foreign agents. Last year, Putin said, we're going to have to follow the same rules America does. And America makes you register as a foreign agent if you're operating on foreign money, and so that's what we're going to do.
Are some of the more well-known NGOs involved in this, like Human Rights Watch?
In one way or the other, yeah. Okay. I mean, they always... Well, do you remember Pussy Riot?
Yeah.
Well, who made the big stink about that? It was the Human Rights Watch, or what's the other one called? It's
Amnesty International, or...
No. Amnesty International, yeah. It was Amnesty International, and maybe also Human Rights Watch. They made a big stink about Pussy Riot and what a brutal dictator Putin was and blah, blah. And so they're all part of it. They have to be. They have to do it in order to show they're doing something. And they all get this money. They're all paid to do these things.
Yeah. Are Israel and NATO involved in this at all?
I don't know about Israel being involved. If they are, then they really are hypocrites, because the most threatened people in Ukraine are the Jews. And the rabbis there have all said that, and some of them have asked for Russian protection. I think one of those Russian cities is 300,000 Jews live in it, and they're frightened to death. And, of course, they're all voting to leave the Ukraine.
Yeah.
So I don't see the payoff for Israel here. And NATO, on the surface, has to be for it because they're an American puppet organization. But I think it really is a threat to Europe. The notion of sanctions, real sanctions, that means no energy for Germany. That means trade falls apart. I mean, all of Europe is dependent on that Russian natural gas. And there's no way to replace that. It would take years. So do they want the industry shut down for years, the homes unheated in the winter? I mean, but there's no such thing as an independent leader in Europe. They're all bought and paid for. Merkel, for example, does not represent Germany. She represents Washington. Hollande doesn't represent France. He represents Washington. Cameron doesn't represent the British people. He represents Washington. They're paid, actually, bags of money. That's where they stand. Now, the thing that can break them off is if Washington pushes them into a situation that they see is just deadly for them. The last thing Europe wants is a war with Russia. I mean, the minute that breaks out, all of Europe's dead.
Yeah.
And they don't want that. And they certainly don't want the economic strife that would come. And so what we see happening is they go along with Washington on the surface, but they fiercely resist any real sanctions. And that's why Washington, so so far has only been able to put meaningless sanctions on a few individual Russians and a few individual Russian companies. But they don't have any effect because if you're a member of the Russian government, you're not permitted to have a foreign bank account. So there's nothing for Washington to see.
Oh.
And the company, all it's done now is to cause Russia to say, well, we're going to leave the dollar system. We're just not going to participate in it anymore. And so that really undermines American power.
Right, right.
So I think it's all, Washington has really made a bad decision.
Yeah, they could lose the chess game here.
They're going to lose it. Wow. They will lose it.
Now, where can someone get a copy of your book, How America Was Lost?
Oh, you can get it from the publisher. You could get it from Amazon. You can get it from Barnes & Noble. You can any of the online booksellers, probably even some bookstores.
Then I also want to encourage people to check out your website, which is www.paulcraigroberts.org. Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time. Is there anything you'd like to share with the listeners that we haven't already discussed?
I think we've said enough.
Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for sharing your audience, Cheryl.
This interview with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts was taped on May 12, 2014. Also, if you'd like to learn more about the situation in the Ukraine, another good website is globalresearch.ca. And now I'm going to close the show with a few sections from an article from his new book, which I highly recommend, and is called How America Was Lost, From 9/11 to the Police Warfare State. And the title of the article in the book is Too Many Years of Lies, From Mossadegh to 9/11. And it was originally written on September 10, 2013. And here goes. Washington has been at war for 12 years. According to experts such as Joseph Stiglitz and Linda Bilmes, these wars have cost Americans approximately $6 trillion, enough to keep Social Security and Medicare sound for years. All there is to show for 12 years of war is fat bank balances for the armament industries and a list of destroyed countries with millions of dead and dislocated people who never lifted a hand against the United States. No evidence exists that supports the government's 9/11 story. The 9/11 Commission was a political gathering run by a neoconservative White House operative. The commission members sat and listened to the government's story and wrote it down. No investigation of any kind was made. One member of the commission resigned, saying that the fix was in. After the report was published, both co-chairmen of the commission and the legal counsel wrote books disassociating themselves from the report. The 9/11 Commission was set up to fail, they wrote. On this 12th anniversary of a false flag event, it is unnecessary for me to report the voluminous evidence that conclusively proves that the official story is a lie. You can read it for yourself. It's available online. You can read what the architects and engineers have to say. You can read the scientists' reports. You can hear from the first responders who were in the World Trade Center towers. You can read the pilots who say that the maneuvers associated with the airliner that allegedly hit the Pentagon was beyond their skills and most certainly were not performed by inexperienced pilots. You can read David Ray Griffin's many books. You can watch the film produced by Richard Gage and Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. You can read the 9/11 Toronto Report, International Hearings on 9/11. You can read Hijacking America's Mind on 9/11. Actually, you do not need any of the expert evidence to know that the U.S. government story is false. As I have previously pointed out, had a few young Saudi Arabians, the alleged 9/11 hijackers, been capable of outwitting, without support from any government and intelligence service, not only the CIA, the FBI, but all 16 intelligence services, the intelligence services of Washington's NATO allies and Israel's Mossad, the National Security Council, NORAD, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, air traffic control, and defeat airport security four times in 1 hour on the same morning, the White House, Congress, and the media would have been demanding an investigation of how the national security state could so totally fail. On this 12th anniversary of 9/11, ask yourself if you really want to believe that temperatures half those reached by your self-cleaning oven caused three massive steel structures to crumble into dust. Then ask yourself why your government thinks you are so totally stupid as to believe such a fairy tale. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.